Night's Fork by Rowena Cherry. Prologue. Tigron Imperial Palace. Mating ceremony for Princess Marcia Julia and Prince Jethro Jason. Earth date equivalent, August the 30th, 1994. Carpe Scrotum. Sees life by the testicles. Behind her public figure smile, the Princess Ambassador Electra Geraldina, Queen of Volnoth, pondered her private mantra while waiting for her sister's mating ceremony to begin. One sometimes wondered whether normal people entertained secret thoughts of doing scandalously inappropriate deeds, such as fellating a dignitary during some solemn ceremony or other. Not that a princess would. Such behavior could get both of them incinerated on the spot for high treason. Without looking down, Electra slid the lower of her folded hands, her left, over her thigh and until the backs of her fingers brushed the soft, bristly, scruff-ruff of the collared imperial tiger crouching on that side of her. Being an imperial princess and a barbarian's queen, and also the representative of an interstellar superpower, meant that one had to spend long expanses of one's days and nights sitting still with the eyes of the world upon one, obliged to appear pleasantly amused when nothing whatsoever was happening. One sat in wait, waiting for one's awful god relatives to mate or die or produce an heir or sign a treaty. To give strength and mystery to her royal smile, Electra conjured up mental images of testicles. It was almost impossible to be intimidated by the all-powerful males who surrounded her when she imagined their little vulnerabilities. Strangely, she never thought of her own mate, Visigoths. Her wrists prickled a psychic warning. Someone was trying to read her mind. The more nervous of her black, saber-toothed protectors snarled. Quiet, Beta. Electra turned her face with ingrained regal dignity and, still smiling, inclined her head to her great-uncle Django Ra, who sat sprawled on the parapet of the royal family's tiger pit, stroking his jaw and probing minds for weaknesses. Where was I? Ah, yes. Seizing testicles. She mused, and met great-uncle Django's star-blue stare. You might be interested if I were to think about my Volnoth subject's bizarre fertility rituals. On the other hand, uncle, if you knew that I'm aware that you're trying to read my mind, you wouldn't know whether or not I'm pulling your positor, would you? He looked away. Django wasn't a coward, and he couldn't be shamed. However, he was a consummate predator and easily bored. He preferred unsuspecting prey. She thinks, I wonder, is my green-eyed white knight here? Covertly, Electra scanned the guests, seeking one enemy knight among the choppy white seas of alien ambassadors. Because the godless Saurian knightly orders were on the wrong side of the old Cold War, all the knights wore diplomatic immunity white all the time. While they wore white, they could not be touched, which presented a practical difficulty for a would-be seductress toying with the idea of seizing a particular dignitary. Will I know him if I see him? Most knights hid their identity under the distinctive lizard or dragon head masks, ostensibly for life support. Yet Electra felt sure that she would recognize the one she sought by the slant of his broad shoulders, by the elegant arrogance of his deportment, by how gin-tall he was, and by his gold-flecked, rare mineral-green aura. She had first seen her knight's face, quite by chance, at her brother's mating ceremonies less than 3 cycles ago. Her throat had contracted, her stomach had flipped, she gasped in the shock of recognition. Apart from dark eyes that were as green as Viz Igard's, the knight looked like a lean, mean, younger version of Tarrant Aragon, her brother. I wonder if he could get me pregnant, she thought. Before she could ask him, he disappeared. Of course, he was an enemy and much too young to endanger her heart. But the Queen of the Volnoths wasn't looking for a lover. Haunted by his vis-igot green eyes and his near-gin stature, she'd made discreet inquiries. All she'd been able to find out was that his friends called him Rhett, and he was known for his virtue, his deadliness with a sword, and his unattainability. The trail had turned as cold as his eyes. All hope seemed lost until the summonses went out for all the world's leaders and their spies to watch Marsha Julia take her new mate. Surely, Electra reasoned, the Saurians' leader would send Rhett. The Imperial fanfare's first blast from the upper balconies jolted her thoughts back to the present and to the descending throne stage. Electra watched the appearance of her overstated, ultra-fashionable younger sister on the stark arm of their wicked brother, Tarrant Aragon, who always wore black. The ceremony had begun. Wistfully, Electra scanned the masked males in white. There was one among them who might be, but no. That sorry ambassador was a tiger's length tall, but he was heavier. One after another, the four sets of great double doors thundered shut. Latecomers wouldn't be allowed in. Rhett isn't here. He isn't coming. Electra stroked the sleek, heavily muscled tiger's shoulder on her left, as if it were Alf who'd suffered the disappointment. Humid. What a pity. The more she thought about Rhett, the more perfect he seemed for illicit, urgent baby-making. Through half-closed eyes, Electra watched her ruthless brother and her frivolous, embarrassing sister parade down the steps of the heir apparent's throne stage, and she visualized the child that Rhett might give her if she could catch him with his lower body out of uniform. Its hair would be dark. Rhett's hair, which he wore long, with thick curls breaking over his shoulders, was an iridescent black. Hers was dark, too. All Jin were either dark-haired or silver. Hair color didn't matter. It was the eyes that would be decisive in allowing Visigod to believe that Rhett's child was his own. It was worth any risk for the chance that Rhett's son's eyes would be green like Visigod's. However, it was more likely that the desperately wanted child's eyes would be dark blue-gray like her own, for the same reason that, for all his elaborate fertility rituals and for all his alpha male virility, Visigod was having such trouble getting her pregnant. Jin genes were dominant. A great Jin male, smart seaman, could impregnate a Volnorf female, but it didn't work the other way around. It never had. It never would. Unhappily, Visigod's machismo didn't allow him to accept the scientific fact that his subspecies seaman was incapable. The timing would be less easy to explain, but war drum thunder rumbled. Artificial clouds of hallucinogenic smoke churned. Electra's father, the god emperor, made his dramatic appearance and pronounced the traditional menacing speech about incinerating conscientious objectors to the mating in progress. The massed male-voiced choir roared out the mating anthem. The great doors opened. Her heart thudded anew with irrational hope for a high-ranking late arrival, but the doors had opened to admit Marsha Julia's mate-to-be. She looked again. Prince Jethro Jason was not alone. His tall supporter wore white with multiple rounded catch fabrics, dotting a line along the breadth of his shoulders and down his tapered sides. The noble aura was unmistakable. Rhett! Guests shifted in their seats. Garments and lips rustled like a sudden wind gust in dry season sword grass. Some exclaimed about the bearded Prince Jethro Jason's emaciated state, and wondered where he had come from and whether or not he'd been tortured until he agreed to go through with this meeting. Others whispered of Rhett. He looks like Tarrant Aragon. Yes, he wears white. Did you hear? He claims to be the royal Saurian djinn of prophecy. If word of that rash boast came to Tarrant Aragon's ears, Rhett's days as an eligible stud would be cut short. Tarrant Aragon did not tolerate potent rivals. Was she already too late? Heart-thudding, Electra assessed Rhett's gait, but she could not tell about the state of his genitals from the effortless, self-assured grace and economy with which he moved. If I get to him in time, where could we go? How quickly could he do the deed? She shifted her focus to the deep side vent in Rhett's tabard and tantalizing glimpses of his long, lean thighs and tight, white-sheathed buttocks. Would one time be enough? appearances, even when the object of one's interest swung naked in full view, were no guide to how much potent exuberance. Why is Marcia Julia yowling? Before Electra could discern what had caused her sister's extraordinary outburst, the scrawny Prince Jethro Jason crumpled and flew backwards. Rhett sidestepped gracefully, turning as he moved, so that his swiftly drawn sword was held out of the way of flying limbs. Anyone who knew sword fighters, as she did, saw proof that Rhett's sword was no decoration, and that Rhett was an expert, elegant killer when he wanted to be. Possibly, a look of gentle concern should replace one's politely amused smile. Electra adjusted her expression, though no one was looking at her. All eyes were on the scandalous bride, who apparently did not intend to be mated to the poor specimen now sprawled at her feet. Even the masked male warriors' choral rendition of the mating anthem stumbled. They were superbly disciplined, but who can sing when an ultra-feminine princess hurls a gin prince across the throne room without touching him? Will she kick him? Will she take his hand and help him up? She'll lift her skirts and lower herself astride him where he lies. Guests whispered and wished. One could smell their excitement and their vicarious arousal. They'd come to see mating. If they only knew what debaucheries took place in a bid to rump-start an infertile queen on Volnoff. Marcia Julia turned from her would-be mate. She ran away. A semi-silent communal groan rippled the heavy air as the disappointing princess ran for the exit, then head swiveled to glare at the fallen Jethro Jason, or else to look askance at the god princes, Rhett among them, to see what they were doing about this unprecedented turn of events. Electra made a decision and rose. At my thigh, she commanded Alpha and Beta, the tigers who were her pets and her protection wherever she went. They padded beside her, snarling and woofing at anyone who came close. Heart thumping at her own daring, Electra glided to the doors that had been opened at Tarrant Aragon's signal to allow Marcia Julia egress. If anyone noticed Electra leaving the throne room, they'd assume that she was going after her sister to comfort her. This was the chance no one could have created. Carpe Rhett, seize the night. Such unimaginable luck did not fall into one's hands very often. Once through the doors, Electra changed course and made for the other throne room, where the banquet was to be held. As she had anticipated, extra liquor was being rushed to the guests' seating banks and tables, and hurried changes were being made to the place settings on the Imperial High Table. It would hardly be tactful to sit Marcia Julia beside her rejected mate, or leave empty places side by side in the seats of honor at the consummation banquet. Now it was obvious that no mating had been consummated in public, nor would be consummated in private. The feast would take place without the unhappy couple. I am the only princess at a table full of princes. Electra smiled at the master of protocol, who came bustling towards her with his eyes bulging in a visible effort not to appear relieved to see her. She gestured to the seating plan. There was no seating tag for a knight of the Saurian orders known as Rhett, but there was one for the great djinn, Prince Jarrett. So he is the royal Saurian djinn. Electra pointed a finger to her own name, which was placed according to strict imperial protocol and precedence between her father, the Emperor, and her brother, the Dominator, Crown Prince Tarrant Aragon.
We have one guest who may be feeling uncomfortable. I shall comfort him.
The board was interactive, and she wore magnets. She dragged and dropped her name to where she wanted to be, between her brother and Rhett.
Bring a tray of bones. My tigers will lie between me and the Crown Prince, she added, finding an excuse to move her seat a little further from her brother's and an extra 2 tigers' widths closer to Rhett.
The Emperor would be delighted to have his son, whom he saw too seldom, at his side. With luck, he would engage Tarrant Aragon in conversation, which would prevent either of them from overhearing what she had to say to Rhett. As she watched, the bustle of royal servants muted their psychic signatures and effaced themselves, and the first guests burst into the amphitheatrical room and toward the long and laden tables. Electra trembled inside. No more idle daydreams. She was going to do something truly scandalous. Electra rehearsed the words she'd use to ask the virile Rhett to impregnate her.
That is the end of my first reading of the prologue of Knight's Fork by Rowena Cherry. Knight's Fork can, more excerpts from Knight's Fork can be read at www.rowenacherry.com.
Okay, folks, this is the last chapter we're going into. Gee, that can be implied to anything. And again, if you're interested in doing a backstage program with the IBTR, reading out an ad, cover, a prologue, and a chapter, contact Lillian Caldwell at 734-332-5902. Hold on. Thank you.